Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with SportingBet.com.
New York, London, Paris, Munich, everybody talk about World Cup qualifiers. Yup, in today's Football Weekly, all the weekend's action. Wow. There's the England game. Blame it on Rio as Ferdinand's blunder has them, yes, singing in the Ukraine. There's Ireland, Italy. Whelan left them reeling and St. Ledger showed they weren't at the races, but the world champs sealed their place with that late equaliser from Gilardino as Ireland head to the playoffs. There's more. Matt Stats Ahoy and Jonathan Wilson's trip to Russia, Germany. And there's the madness at the Monumental, an Argentina-Peru game that sent shockwaves through South America, and that was just Diego's belly slide. We ran up all the World Cup winners and losers and explained how the playoffs really work. And look at your post, Time Lord Fergie against the refs and the fit and proper persons test, almost as tough as your cycling proficiency or a modern A-level. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Right, well, welcome on board then, everybody. In particular this week, Sean Ingle.
Well, hello, James.
Hey, that's a Sven-Göran Eriksson impression, isn't it, Sean?
Might be.
might indeed. Barry Glendening.
Hello.
Hello to you. And Jonathan Wilson.
Hello.
Your blinking LEDs lending a cosy hue to our podscape here. Lovely. Now, Sean, you were referencing Sven-Göran Eriksson, who was, of course, my companion through the media experiment that was Ukraine-England on Saturday. I have to say, not necessarily the most important game to talk about from the weekend, but somehow we're just going to start with it, aren't we?
Well, we are an English-based pod, and most of our listeners are from England, so it'd be remiss not to. It was hard to judge the game because there was the man sent off quite early on. England were pretty poor. It's worrying that the Rio Ferdinand again made another mistake. It's third, I think, significant error. There was a game against Holland where he had that hapless back pass into Dirk Kuyt. There was one in the Manchester derby as well. It worries me, I think, that he's played just 19 of his last 41 competitive games. He's got a persistent back injury and certainly he's taken a hammering from the tabloids today.
Mm. He wasn't the only person to make an error, though, was he? Because Ashley Cole not... Because it was Rio Ferdinand's error that led to Robert Green bringing down whoever the Ukrainian was for the penalty, which then Shevchenko missed.
Was it?
Bless him. But very possibly. But then the goal from Nazarenko, that all began with an Ashley Cole error.
You're looking at me, James. I didn't see the match because it wasn't on television.
Right. Yes, indeed not. Well, it was. So, two major errors from the England back four. A reality check for England. Great news, though, for the Ukraine, Jonathan.
Great news for them. Very bad news for Croatia.
Yes.
Because if Ukraine don't mess up against Andorra on Wednesday, then they get the playoff spot.
Indeed so. So, there you go. No Croatia in the World Cup and Ukraine going instead. Is that a bit of a drop in quality level or are you happy with that?
I think Croatia have been a little bit unfortunate in qualifying that... I think the nature of international football is that quite minor incidents can have a huge effect because of so few games. And I think the retirements of, I mean, Niko Kovac in particular, but also Dario Simic, have made things difficult for Croatia defensively. They've had injuries to Eduardo and to Modric. And I think at club level, you probably have time to sort those out. You have 2 or 3 weeks where you could try replacements, you could try a new tactical shape. And Slaven Bilic hasn't really been able to do that just because of the nature of the qualifiers. So, I mean, Croatia can't complain. They haven't played well enough, but I don't think you can really blame Bilic too much for it.
All right, okay.
While we're here, James, before we move on, we should really talk about the internet experiment. You and Sven, apparently they reckon they got up to 500,000 people watched online, and they saw you trying to... It was like trying to get blood out of stone, trying to get anything out of Sven at all, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know that that's necessarily true.
What did he tell you in the sort of... You had a half an hour build-up. We didn't even have many advertising breaks at half-time, so you had a longer stretch from them there.
Yes.
Tried, James. You really tried.
Well, he's a very personable man, but he's not known for his controversial outbursts in particular. He is a man who's used to being on new platforms, of course, if the old record. But beyond that, no, I think the fact that he was a former England manager, it would have been lovely if he'd said, you know, what Capello's doing wrong is this, or what I did wrong that Capello's doing right is that. But, you know, I think that was never really going to happen. And, it was lovely to have him along.
A good interviewer would be able to wheedle that kind of information out of him.
Yes, surely they would.
Did you get a sense of that sort of animal magnetism that has wooed women from Stockholm to Senegal, probably.
Has it? What do you know about Sven and Senegal, Sean?
Well, no, but seriously, he has that thing, doesn't he?
Does he?
Well, I saw
money.
It here.
I think it's called.
Right, well, I can see where this is heading, so I'm just going to say no, I don't know what you're talking about. So there you go. Well, terrific. Now, of altogether greater consequence, perhaps, Barry, was Ireland's rip-roaring clash at Croke Park with Italy on Saturday night. What a shock finale, eh?
Yeah, it was a belter of a game. Ireland went 1-0 up with Trapattoni's Gattuso, scored the opener, and what a goal it was. Kudos too, to Liam Lawrence, who teed the ball up beautifully for Glenn Whelan.
The Italian press are raving about Liam Lawrence. They said, if only we had a player like him.
Really?
Indeed they did yesterday.
My word. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But, yep. And I'm still not sure if you're being sarcastic.
No, it's dead true.
But Liam Lawrence teed up it because he wasn't actually looking where he was putting the ball. So, you know.
That was the key, I think, probably.
And Whelan scored a marvellous goal. Italy equalised, and then, much to everyone's amazement, everyone in Croke Park's amazement, Ireland went ahead again.
Mm.
And their inability to close out the game cost them the 3 points. They were really foolish. When they should have been wasting time, should have been sitting back defending the lead, they were caught in possession on the 21-yard line up at the far end. And what annoyed me most, I think, was the space Italy attacked was the space John O'Shea should have been occupying. And he's one of the most experienced players on the Irish team. And you'd think he would have known better.
It was interesting, the reaction of the two Italians on the Ireland bench when Ireland, in the, what was it, the 89th minute, had that 2-1 lead. Tardelli kind of did the Lurlo part two, you know. He looked like he just won the World Cup in 82. He was jumping up and down next to Trapattoni. And then when the equaliser from Gilardino came in, Trapattoni turned round and started wagging his finger and shouting at one of the Ireland bench. I've no idea what he was saying, if it involved the word take that, you bog trotter, or anything like that. but anyway, into the... Sorry, Sean, you were going to say something.
I was just going to ask, not everyone knows, but has greeted Ireland's draw with, you know, in Ireland with praise. Certainly Eamon Dunphy was quite harsh, wasn't he, in his comments?
I don't know what he said, and I don't really care, because Dunphy's a bit of a clown, to be honest. Dunphy, as far as I know, Dunphy, Liam Brady...
He said Ireland was shameful against Italy and football people at home would be crying.
Right.
What was shameful about them?
As far as I know, and I haven't seen it, I'm only going on what I've heard, so it may not be true, but as far as I know, Dunphy, Brady and Giles, who are the regular... Or not Brady, sorry, Souness, I think it is, and Giles, who are the regular pundits for RT, have been bemoaning the absence of Stephen Ireland and Andy Reid from the Irish team. Now, Stephen Ireland won't play, so there's nothing that can be done about that. Andy Reid... Trapattoni insists there's nothing personal in his decision to omit Andy Reid, and there quite clearly is, because Andy Reid's in the form of his life. He's lost a load of weight. He deserves a second chance, and he's probably a better player than any of the players that were out there on Saturday night, with the possible exception of Shea Given or Richard Dunn. But Dunphy and Giles have been building them up, and in their absence, you know, have been building them up and sort of turned them into Pelés. And they're not playing. Ireland should have won that game, and Ireland's inability to hold on to leads has cost them top spot in that group. It's an awful shame that Italy go into their game against Cyprus with no pressure on them, because Cyprus did well against Bulgaria on Saturday and could possibly have got a draw, and then who knows what would have happened.
Indeed. Is there no chance that Stephen Ireland, if Ireland do get through to the World Cup, will reconsider this?
He has said he doesn't want to play and has no plans to play for them in the near future. Say we did qualify and he did get called up, which I doubt would happen, but if it did, hypothetically, I think the fallout in Ireland would be worse than that when Keane...
Why is that?
Because a lot of people in Ireland think Stephen Ireland shouldn't be allowed to play for Ireland. If he doesn't want to, then let him F off and, you know, to hell with him.
Just mention Ireland's opponents on Wednesday, Montenegro, who got their first ever win on Saturday, first ever win in a competitive fixture, winning 2-1 at home to Georgia. And the nice thing about that was the winner came from Andrea Dlibosic, who was when he first came through as a kid at Partizan, looked fantastic, and he scored in each of his first 7 games. I went to interview him, and he gave me a lift back to the station. So he's a nice bloke. His career's gone a bit downhill. He's playing in the Spanish second division, but I think this may have been his debut for Montenegro, and he got the winner. So,
all right then,
good
fantastic,
for him, and good for them.
Yes, yeah.
Do you think footballers realise how much little things like giving journalists lift back to the station means to them? How much good PR is in it for them? Niall Quinn offered to give me a lift back to the station once, and I was very grateful.
You must be the only Sunderland fan he hasn't given a lift to.
Probably, yeah.
Barry has a point, though, and it's the difference between footballers and other sportsmen is huge. I remember once interviewing Colin Jaws live, the darts pad, and we played a game of darts together, game of 301, he thrashed me, and he said, I'd spent hours of his time, he drove me back, so mm-hmm. I made my train, and you never get that from a footballer. It's normally 5 minutes in and out, and boom.
Yeah. Although producer Ben was just in my ear asking what my biggest perk from a footballer would be, and I refer again to the story of Antonio Cassano, who as a young man bought me lunch in Bari. I have to say, I'm glad it was that way around, not the other way, because if I'd been paying for Cassano's lunch bill, I'd, yes. Anyway, now, so Italy, anyway, with that draw us through, yep. Ireland are in the playoffs. Serbia also confirmed their place in the World Cup. France are into the playoffs. How the playoffs will work, well, confirmed in there at the moment are Russia, Bosnia, France, as I mentioned, Ireland, as I mentioned, probably Ukraine, Slovenia, Greece, and Portugal. Yes, Portugal are back in the running now. They beat Hungary 3-0. Losing Ronaldo, who's apparently going to be out for a month, although estimates vary, which mean he'll miss the big Real Madrid-Milan Champions League clash. And Denmark beating Sweden means that Portugal move up into second place. And who they've got to beat Malta at home on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Belgium beat Turkey in the Spanish group. Bosnia are now confirmed in the playoff spot. As I mentioned, Fatih Terim quitting.
Can we just ask Jonathan Myers here about Bosnia? Because they seem they've got a lot of young players, quite an exciting side. People are sort of tipping them up as a good chance. They could actually not just get to the World Cup. If they do, they could perhaps get through to the knockouts.
Have you been listening to Pele again?
They're great going forward. They've got a lot of very good attacking players. Defensively, I think they have some issues. But going forward, I mean, Dzeko and Ibisevic both scored on Saturday, both in great form in the Bundesliga. Misimovic playing just behind them. I mean, Pjanic, who's playing really well for Lyon, can't even get in the team. But I think at the back they've got some real problems. But I mean, the Bosnia story is an extraordinary story. I mean, 18 months ago, the FA board was being accused of embezzlement. Mehko Kodro, the coach, had walked out. The players went on strike in support of him. So there's a game when the youth coach who was taking charge of the team for that one game was literally driving around Sarajevo, knocking on the doors of players, saying, "Look, we need to put a team out."
For a friendly or a qualifier?
For a friendly against Azerbaijan. And the of the 22-man squad that had been picked, 19 either said, "I'm not playing," or they claimed to have injuries. And a load of them then turned out for a charity game that happened on the same day. And there's a story about just a local in Zenica, which is where the game was being played, went into a hotel where they were based. And the kit man ran over to him, pressed a key into his hand, said, "Get yourself up to the second floor. Get yourself changed. You're half an hour late. What are you doing? Get downstairs. We'd go on training." "I'm just coming to have an ice cream with my girlfriend." "Who are you? What are you talking about?" And he thought he was one of the players because they had such randoms kind of playing for them. And they did the logical thing when you're in a mess. You turn to a 74-year-old madman, Ciro Blazovic, who's come in. And by being incredibly charismatic and bombastic, he's pulled them together. But he's an extraordinary man. I interviewed him before the game against Turkey. And within 5 minutes of the start of the conversation, he called Carlos Bilardo a complete prick. We were discussing who'd invented 3-5-2, whether it'd been him or Bilardo. And I said Bilardo had told me that it was him. And he said, "What does he know, that know-nothing prick?" I point out he'd won a World Cup, but he said he was coach of a tournament in 98 when he took Croatia to the third. So.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, that's fascinating.
In that group... Belgium turned around and shoved Paul Doyle's words right back down its throat by beating Turkey 2-0. So now Fatih Terim has announced he's going to resign.
Yeah, I mentioned that actually, you were drawing on your penis at the time.
Oh, sorry. Was I?
Not literally, listeners. That's a metaphor.
For what?
One other thing about Blažević, whenever he's done well, he's always had a lucky totem. So when he won the league with Dinamo Zagreb, he had a lucky white scarf. In 98, he wore a gendarme's cap all the way through. He now has a lucky pair of shoes. He was given by Milan Bandic, the mayor of Zagreb. And they're two sizes too small for him. So this is a 74-year-old man hobbling around in shoes too small for him. And I said to him, this is ridiculous. Why are you doing this? And he went, "I tell you, when I take the shoes off, the feeling is greater than anything I've ever known."
Bizarre. Thank you very much, Jonathan, for that. And thank you, Sean, for asking about Bosnia. Well, what an unexpected seam of pod gold that was. Now, Jonathan, in the meantime, you've just been off, you were talking about the playoffs and et cetera, who's in there, and a team that presumably nobody really wants to get are Russia, because you just saw them in Moscow on Saturday. Germany becoming the first team to win a World Cup qualifier there. I mean, obviously Russia had been doing that, so the first away team to win.
Yeah, Russia and the Soviet Union had previously been unbeaten in all World Cup qualifiers, and the only team who'd ever beaten them in any qualifier in Russia was France, and I think the build-up to year 2000.
All right, tell us an amazing stat about Germany.
They've never lost an away World Cup qualifier, and indeed they've only lost two games ever in World Cup qualifier.
I was watching this on a slightly illegal internet stream, and they were a bit lucky though, Germany, weren't they? Once you'd have thought this, Russia should have got at least a point.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first half, though, Germany did really well to kind of just... I mean, the atmosphere was amazing, as it was for the England game 2 years ago. And I think Germany did really well to kind of calm that down. Russia didn't really hit any kind of rhythm before half-time. Germany 1-0 up by then. Mesut Ozil, who was a key player when they won the Under-21 Championship earlier in the year and is playing really well for Werder Bremen. First time I'd seen him live, he looked really good playing just behind the front man. He set up a goal, neat little 1-2 of Podolski, and squared it for closer to score. But then the second half, yeah, as you say, Russia were significantly better. Adler made three or four very good saves, and Russia probably should have had a penalty when Balak seemed to foul a Shavin.
What was the reaction like in Moscow to Russia losing this game?
There was a little bit of moaning at Hiddink. There was a sense that... I mean, the big issue was playing Alexander Kerzhikov rather than Pavlyuchenko, but Hiddink's explanation was Pavlyuchenko had a bit of a hamstring strain. Kerzhikov didn't play well. Kerzhikov's one of those players I've never seen play well. I mean, his record is very good, so he's a bit of an Ibrahimovic figure. He appears to play well, but just never when I'm looking. And also, should he have played Semak at the back of midfield instead of Denisov?
Well, that's the question Barry and I were debating.
And possibly, had he done so, Ozil wouldn't have had so much space.
Yeah.
In a sense, the pressure was taken off the game because of FIFA's announcement they're going to seed the playoffs.
Well,
so they know they'll be seeded.
Yeah, I was saying well done for mentioning that. We talked about this a little bit on Thursday. The seeding business, do we know now, can we make a guess at who's going to be facing who or who can face who?
In all likelihood, France, Russia, Greece and Portugal against Slovenia, Ireland, Bosnia, Ukraine. So Jonathan was positing the theory earlier that... they'll want France and Portugal there, obviously, so they'll get Slovenia and Bosnia or Ireland.
I guess they'd be the two, they'd be perceived as being the two easiest games.
I think if I had my choice, I'd take, for Ireland, I'd take France, then Greece, then Portugal.
And you'd rather face France than Greece?
Yeah, at the moment, definitely.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, as usual, it's Wide World, etc. of football, World Cup qualifying and that. We'll be touching on one or two of the other big stories and, of course, that Argentina-Peru mad, mad game right after this.
Football Weekly from The Guardian in association with SportingBet.com.
Now, if you were lucky enough to witness Argentina-Peru Saturday night, Sunday morning, then you will have been party to an absolutely extraordinary chapter of South American qualifying football. Argentina winning 2-1 to stay on course for a remarkable return to the World Cup after looking a bit dead and buried. Barry, you're our go-to guy for all things Argentine.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, you came home early from the pub to catch this and were richly rewarded.
Yeah, it was one of the best decisions I've ever made, which goes to show how few good decisions I've made in my 36 years on this earth. But it was a remarkable game. Just to put it in context, Peru are the worst team in South America by a considerable margin. I think they're propping up the group there. Argentina obviously are struggling. Diego Maradona put out a strange team selection. Five of the players in his starting 11, I think, had six caps between them. A lot of them were defenders. And again, they defended like a team who were, you know, was full of novices. But anyway, Argentina took the lead with a goal from Higuain shortly after half time. And it looked as then Higuain was immediately substituted. He was confident, ready to get a second. So what does Maradona do? Takes him off, bolsters the defence by sending on Di Michaelis. And then with about 30 seconds left on the clock, Peru had some good chances and then equalised with 30 seconds.
Well, in the meantime, there's an unbelievably biblical downpour had begun.
Oh, yeah, it was apocalyptic. Like, the biblical downpour, as you say. It was very difficult to make out what was going on TV because the lens of the camera was so wet and foggy. So you could just sort of see these red and blue shapes gadding about.
Bit like on the internet.
Maradona was like a drowned rat on the sideline. And when Peru got their equaliser as a result of the usual slack marking from Argentina.
And a bit of a wayward back pass, a back heel by Mascherano in his own area.
Yeah, he attempted to clear the ball with a back pass, which didn't work. Nah, and it was never going to. So anyway, it looked as if Peru had secured the draw, but Argentina threw the kitchen sink at them, and Palermo scored the winner. Except that from the kickoff of this goal, with seconds left on the clock, some Peruvian tried a shot from the halfway line and hit the crossbar, and they got a corner from that. But the game ended anyway, so Maradona is hailing the miracle of Palermo.
Yeah.
So Argentina now have to... They're playing away at Uruguay.
Can we just talk about the iconic image, though? Maradona's mudslide.
Yeah,
it looks a little bit like Thunderbird 2, I thought, as he slid along the thing. We had
I thought he looked a little like a penguin trying to negotiate a hill. But yeah, he just ran and did a belly flop into the ground. And I mean, he was saturated, so he's probably about 3 stone heavier than usual with all the water that was clinging to him, and landed on the soggy pitch.
Franklin Delano Blues posting, saying, I know that most people will focus on Maradona's fabulous dive in the rain, but I personally love Martin Palermo's Shawshank Redemption-esque celebration, where he stood there in the rain.
With his shirt off. And it was quite funny, because as he ran away from the goal, he was trying to take his shirt off, but it was because it was so wet, he was really struggling to get it off.
We've all been there.
Yeah, oh, yeah, of course.
Anyway, that means...
Well, Argentina play Uruguay in Uruguay on Wednesday, and in South America... There's one automatic promotion spot, or one automatic qualification spot up for grabs, and the playoffs place, and it's between Argentina, Ecuador, and Uruguay.
Right, you're a big fan of Martin Palermo, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I once sat next to him in a bar. He was signing a contract with an agent, and I was eating a club sandwich.
Well, what bar was this then?
It was in the Intercontinental Hotel in Buenos Aires.
Mm, cool, eh?
And I think, yeah, in terms of the, I mean, I think I've mentioned this before that. Well, Argentinian league football is great to watch, but that also counts against them at national level because basically all their players are either attacking midfielders or they're holding midfielders who try to stop attacking midfielders. So they've got very, very few good forwards and very, very few good defenders or goalkeepers.
In their league?
And just generally in Argentina. They produce huge numbers of great midfielders and very little of anybody else. Obviously, in an ideal world, you wouldn't have a 35-year-old, I think Palermo is, or 36.
Well, it's not as if they don't have any other options.
Well, they've got Higuain and they've got Milito, but who else have they got who's actually a real out-and-out centre-forward? If you've decided that you're not going to pick Milito... Well, Milito was injured at the weekend
anyway.
And if you've got this issue with Higuain apparently not getting on with various other squad members, including your son-in-law, apparently he doesn't get on with Aguero.
Well, Aguero doesn't get on the field either, though.
Well, because he's had a very bad start of the season, hasn't he? He's been playing pretty poorly for Atletico.
Fair.
But Palermo gives him a real muscular option. He's very good at holding the ball up, and I think given the number of good attacking midfielders they have... That's the kind of player Argentina need to do the job Serginho did for Brazil in the 82 World Cup, to do the job Givach did for France in 98, to do the job Emil Heskey does for Capello's England.
Right.
Except
that job. Yeah.
Except that Palermo scores goals.
But this isn't part of a grand plan. You get the sort of sense of Maradona, it's like sort of trying to pin the tail on a donkey, you know, blindfold, and he stumbled around for months and has somehow managed to do that. I mean, he's picked 78 players in 11 matches.
Well, he hasn't done it yet, despite having some of the world's greatest
players. And you sort of said about the extraordinary. It's only extraordinary because they've been so bad for the last 7 or 8 months. They've been losing to everyone, that they're actually in this position.
They could have lost that game very easily on Saturday. Peru had some good chances in the second half before they scored, and with better finishing would have beaten Argentina.
I take your point completely about the crazy selection policy, and if you pick 70 odd players you will happen on a couple of right selections. What I would say is if you look at both the 86 and the 90 World Cup when Bilardo, who's now Maradona's assistant, was in charge, they had dreadful records leading up to the World Cup, and experimentation was very much the way of things. But I think leading up to 86, I think they'd lost 7 games in a row, then they played Israel in the final warm-up game and won that game 7-2. And Maradona's autobiography says that the first game against South Korea, most Argentina fans watched from behind their hands because they feared humiliation. And I think it's dangerous to kind of read too much in the past history, but I do wonder if there's a similar process going on, that he really is exercising all options with Bilardo, kind of directing things from a background, and possibly yeah, the precedent is there that they get it right when it matters.
Yeah, that's probably what's going on. Absolutely. Anyway, so well, Chile are now through as of the weekend after their 4-2 victory over Colombia, alongside Paraguay and Brazil. One more automatic qualifying spot to come, as Barry mentioned. The contenders for that are Argentina and Uruguay and Ecuador. Ecuador could get into the playoff spot, the fifth place.
Yeah.
Argentina on 25 points, Uruguay on 24, and they meet in Uruguay. Just to give you those away stats again for Argentina, their last four road games, they've had four straight defeats. They have conceded 10 goals and scored only one. So what are the chances of them getting the result in Uruguay on Wednesday?
Well, I've seen Uruguay a couple of times and haven't been particularly impressed. They rely a hell of a lot on Forlan. I saw the game against Peru and they were without him. They were shocking. Two poor sides. It wouldn't shock me at all if there was a draw.
Even on Saturday, I mean, they only got in the position they're in, Uruguay, with a 94th minute penalty from Forlan to win away in Ecuador.
Mm. To be fair, they did have a stonewaller of a penalty turned down earlier in the game, which would have helped them. I've seen Argentina's last three qualifiers and I don't see any hope in hell of them beating Uruguay away from home.
Where do you stand on Juan Verón, by the way? Because I was absolutely hammered by a couple of... Because I've seen him a few times, and I don't think he's particularly good anymore.
South American Player of the Year, some posters point again.
Well, they were, but you know, that again, I think the South American League is a hell of a lot different than playing international football.
Martin Palermo is a former South American player.
I think it's an issue of the pace of the game as well, that in the context of the Argentinian League and the context of the Libertadores, which Estudiantes won last season with Ferran being brilliant, he operates very well. Now, yeah, I don't think you have to play necessarily quick football at international level, but you run the risk of what happened in the Copa America final, that you come up against a team. Argentina were great in that tournament right until the final, and then they got hammered by Brazil in the final because Brazil did get in amongst them. So you always, if you're going to play at a slow pace, you always run that risk. I think Ferran's inclusion is totally justified on present form, though. And if you're going to pick 70-odd players, he's certainly one of your top 70-odd players in Argentina.
Right. Fair point. If Argentina do get through, there is a suggestion that might push England into the second tier vis-a-vis seeding. Anyway, well, listen, must move on. Then around the world, USA and Mexico have both sealed their qualification. The US had a 3-2 win over Honduras. Mexico had a 4-1 win over El Salvador. This despite the fact that the game was halted for 10 minutes, just a couple of minutes after kickoff, because a swarm of bees took refuge in the goal mouth. Fascinating scenes there at the, I think it was the Azteca, wasn't it?
So there you go. To buzz off. Or was there a sting in the tail?
I did. Now.
I thought you'd give me a high five for that guy.
thank goodness for editing, hey, producer Ben. Now.
That's elsewhere. A hat trick of unanswered puns.
Yes,
in your face, Richardson.
Africa.
He's been stung by that, isn't he?
Now, Ivory Coast, they're through with Ghana, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah. And now there's three more African teams to come. Nigeria's still in with a chance. Tunisia, they're more likely, though, to get through.
Tunisia are in the box seat there.
Yeah. And Algeria are almost there after their 3-1 comeback win against Rwanda.
They play Egypt in the hate match, which is named after when they played each other in 1989. And Brian Oliver, who's the Observer sports editor, was there at that match, which Egypt beat Algeria 1-0. And basically, it all kicked off afterwards. Things were thrown on the pitch.
Potted plants were thrown
on the pitch.
Wasn't one of the team doctors blinded after getting bottled in the face or something by an opposition, an Algerian player?
By Belumi, yeah, who's a former African player of the year. Scored the winner, I think, for Algeria against West Germany in 82.
And who hasn't, you know, it took 20 years for Interpol were after him, and it took basically until this year for everything to calm down a bit over and basically say, we're not going to prosecute you if you go to...
They paid off the team doctor in question, I think. Yeah. But this year it's not going to be so much a hate match as a mild indifference match, because Algeria they're 3 points ahead, and I think Egypt would need to beat them about 7-0 to go through.
Yeah, I think be 3-0 would be enough, wouldn't it?
I think it's... Egypt's
goal difference is 7-4 and Algeria's is 9-2, so if Egypt won 3-0, that'd be plus 6 as opposed to plus 4. So 3-0 would be enough.
Put me back in my box.
Podcasting gold as well. Anyway, elsewhere in
next, learn maths from Barry Glendening.
Bahrain. Hey, that Bahrain-New Zealand clash. A lot of people were berating us for not dedicating enough time to, and boy, were we put in our place by their 0-0 first leg.
Brian Oliver, sorry to mention him again. Yeah. He came in the office and said, I've had a bet on Bahrain to finish 0-0 and Egypt to win 1-0 in their match.
Oof. And is that
both,
what happened?
Both came off. Yeah, they had a win double. He was dancing on up and down the office.
But I imagine goal scoring records at home is dreadful, isn't it? I think they haven't Bahrain. Scored. Yeah, I think, I don't think they've scored in the last five home games.
Well, yet. They've only got five grass pitches in the entire country, so it's not that surprising.
Will you be watching the return? It's well, one for the connoisseur, isn't
here's
it?
Here's what Manamar Mike said about the first one. I watched the whole of the Bahrain-New Zealand game. What a shambles. Both teams really don't deserve to be anywhere near the World Cup. New Zealand parked the bus in the first half, as did poor old Bahrain, who were obviously a little bit confused by the home tie concept. There was not a single chance in the first half. Second half, catalogue of long-range hopefuls, fluff tedders, open goal misses, etc. The most spectacular one provided by a forward who rounded the keeper and with no defenders in view and a goal gaping in front of him, proceeded to hit the post. Unbelievable.
Do you think this is evidence for why Oceania shouldn't exist? I don't mean kind of not exist. I mean not exist in a football context. That they should just completely...
Well, let's not fudge the issue. Let's just wipe it from out.
Yeah. They should amalgamate with the right. Asian Confederation. And if that meant it was too big, we'll split the Asian Confederation down the middle and have an East Asian and a West Asian.
I'm not going to argue with you. But plenty of posters will.
We're doing good work in this pod. Last week we got rid of Belgium.
Yes.
And now we're getting rid of
But we managed to make
Oceania.
Two countries out of it. Wallonia, which I'm still excited about. And... And the other one. Yeah. Okay. That, I think, is enough for part two. In part three, a miscellaneum. What do you call it? Miscellany. All right. In part three, a mycelium. What's he saying? I'm talking about Dallas, aren't I? Miscelli. Yeah. Okay. That's in part two. In part three, all sorts of delights await us. So stay tuned for that. Right. Now... Things I mentioned on my intro, which we haven't actually addressed yet, include Sir Alex Ferguson's pop at Alan Wiley, which he now says he's apologised for without actually saying sorry in any way, shape or form. What are the referees... first of all, why are they upset and what are they planning to do about it?
Well, hang on. He does say, I apologise to Mr Wiley for any personal embarrassment my remarks have caused and to the FFP...
He apologised for any embarrassment his remarks caused and he apologised for the circumstances in which he made his remarks. He hasn't actually apologised for the remarks he made, which were grossly unfair. Because
he said what, Barry?
He said that Wiley wasn't fit enough to referee, physically fit enough to referee a football match.
The football match in question being the 2-2 draw.
The 2-2 draw between Sunderland and Manchester United.
Mm. What did stats show about Wiley's performance in that game?
Well, they showed that he ran further and covered more ground than all but four of the players on the field.
But not how much time he took to do it. That's the crucial.
Well, that's type. True. But yeah. I mean, referees have to pass very stringent fitness tests
do
before
they?
The. Yes,
it's very
they do.
Even filled out.
Yep. They have to run 3,000 meters in 12 minutes.
They have to do beep tests and whatnot. And
they do sprints as well. It's quite.
They've got heart rate monitors that are wired up to kind of a central logging point, so they can be checked at all times.
Well, there you go.
And so, I don't really like blowing smoke up the. Nether regions of referees, but I thought Ferguson's comments were very unfair. And then now I've been reading some journalists have been saying, look, it was just a comment he's apologised for. But my bugbear is that he hasn't apologised. It was a very mealy mouthed excuse for an apology.
But it was classic Ferguson. He was questioned about Ben Foster, who, you know, he talked up about being England's next great goalkeeper a few months ago. He made another mistake last week. So it was a classic deflection. But it's the media who were going to write about Foster then think, he's slagged off referees, we'll write about this instead, and it's come back a little bit.
But when that's so completely transparent, is it a clever ruse to do it then anymore? Or are you saying that the football press pack are so dumb that they fall for it every single time?
Well, it did take the immediate heat off Foster, didn't it? I mean, although kind of subsequently people said, it's just a diversionary tactic, in the immediate aftermath, the following day, that becomes the story rather than Foster.
Yeah, but it's not going to make Foster any less of a dodgy keeper, so...
Yeah, all fair points again. What about this fit and proper person test? We were saying on Thursday, well, they're about to be having a verdict on this, so on QPR and Leeds, etc. So we better not say anything, otherwise we'll be caught out by whatever they decide. What did they decide, Sean?
They decided very little. In truth, it was the Football League. They were looking in the issue of QPR. They're looking into Notts County. They're also looking into Leeds United. Most of us expected Flavio Briatore, who is owner of QPR, to be slung out of the game because one of the rules is that if you're chucked out with another organisation, then you're not fit and proper. And
another sporting organisation.
Yeah.
The rules are: if you're chucked out by a sporting organisation that's even more corrupt than football, then you haven't a leg to stand.
And he obviously with the F1, he told one of his drivers to crash into another driver, and he's been given a suspended sentence there and fined lots of cash. But Football League, I think, are wary of lawsuits. They're wary of other things, and they've really fudged the issue.
I just think the fit and proper persons test, it's almost an impossible thing to apply. I mean, it's very nice in theory, but how would it stand up to any legal challenge? How, unless somebody's actually been convicted of anything, how can football stop somebody buying a club in the same way that the stock exchange couldn't stop somebody buying a business just because they didn't like the look of them? And so I think there's a real danger that football could open itself up to lawsuits.
But then we go into this kind of moral relativism where no one is particularly bad or evil. There's got to be some point, you know, where if a dictator that's killed millions of people goes into a football club, we've got to be able to say, no, hang on a second, you can't buy.
I just don't think you can do that.
No dictator, yeah. No.
Well, yeah, I take your
Gary
point.
Glitter?
Right. I take your point, Jonathan, but surely leagues have the right to say, well, you can buy that club if you want, but we reserve the right to exclude them from our particular competition.
Well, I think the danger in there is you might get sued for restraint of trade.
Well, I suppose you might. You might also ask, in the case of, for example, Leeds and Notts County, to say, you can buy, but we'd like to know actually who you are.
Well, I think that's fair, certainly, yeah. Right. Because what you have to do is to preserve the integrity of the league by making sure that you don't have one owner owning two clubs.
Right, there is that funny smell about Notts County with the rumours now that Sven might leave. And he did look sheepish every time Notts County was mentioned to him, rather than say proud at this exciting project that he was involved in. You do get that funny feeling that it might all collapse.
Well, it was interesting that in Sweden today they're linking him with the Sweden job. I don't know whether because Lagerback is gone. Yeah. You get the sense of Sven, he'll hang around for as long as they keep paying his money.
Right.
And then they may. Well, someone told me that he'd been paid most of it in advance, but I don't know if that's a football person.
Right. And well, there you go. Now, the other question I had about that was Portsmouth, who seemed to remove themselves from the questionable owners list with the takeover by, Mr. Al-Faj? But then various people in Saudi Arabia said, we've never heard of this man. Who is he? Which for a Saudi billionaire crown prince anonymity is a fairly unusual.
Quite a lot of princes in Saudi Arabia.
Well, that's true. But there should be an official record of him somewhere. Nobody has any further information on that?
Is it conceivable that he's a con artist formerly known as Prince?
Barry.
I'm on fire today.
You're on fire. All right, then. Well, listen, let's just finish off then, shall we? With England-Belarus on Wednesday. Jonathan, you've got a couple of Belarusians in your house who are over for this game. I know they're excited about it.
Very much so, yeah. They were in Helsinki for Finland-Wales on Saturday, and they've carried on their trip to London.
And you were saying you'd only met one of them once. So how are you finding that?
Over the space of a week, I met him. He was very helpful in Minsk. I'm very happy to repay the favour.
Johnson's looking slightly nervous that we're going to blow the lid off his Eastern European human trafficking operation that he uses to supplement his meagre income doing occasional podcasts and writing sports books that don't win awards.
It won one award.
Did it?
Yeah.
Which one?
Football Book of the Year.
All right, congratulations.
Just the Football Book of the Year, then.
Yeah. And it's $6.99 on Amazon now, and it's doing really well for sales rank.
I have a copy at home.
Have you read it?
Still in pristine condition, I imagine.
No, it's not entirely pristine.
It's excellent. But anyway,
I'm going to read it when Jimbo's finished his. I'm next on it.
Oh, okay, good one.
Don't lend it. Make him buy it. Jesus.
Yes. Yeah. But anyway, now, as I was saying, England-Belarus... David James performed well. He'll presumably...
He'll start. I think the other interesting thing is how England will play it. We talked about the defence earlier. They're talking about giving maybe Gary Cahill a game. And with McCarragher's retired, Ledley King's knees are getting worse, Woodgate is too injury prone. It means the likes of Matthew Upson, Jonathan Lescott, Cahill and Brown are perhaps going to get a look in.
The other big question, of course, is that when England are a one-man team, and Saturday they demonstrably were, what happens when that one man is missing? Well, we're going to find out on Wednesday.
Well, it's interesting, one of the points Sven...
Rooney not playing.
Yes, yeah. Sven made two good points, I thought. One is that you can't judge Capello until we've had a World Cup, and secondly, how the extent to which England are relying on Rooney. I mean, Rooney has been fantastic this season. As you say, without him, it's pesky and they another.
Mm. Well, there you go. If that's not exciting, I don't know what is. England-Belarus, just one of the many, many tip-top games that are coming up midweek. Of course, Uruguay-Argentina... perhaps the most thrilling, Barry?
No, sorry, I was just going to ask if you could only watch one game on Wednesday, which would it be? So I think Argentina-Uruguay for me.
Yeah.
Definitely, no question, yeah.
I think it's at...
11, is it?
11 or midnight.
All right, okay.
So Argentina-Uruguay, yeah. Or Uruguay-Argentina.
Uruguay-Argentina.
Montevideo.
Well, yeah, I'll certainly be tuning in for that.
So we'll all be bleary-eyed in here on Thursday.
Absolutely. What a story to tell, though. And we will be telling it on Thursday morning. In all its exciting detail. And that's it. Do send us all your comments at guardian.co.uk/footballweekly. But in the meantime, it's many thanks to Sean Ingle.
Thanks, James.
Thank you. Jonathan Wilson.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Barry Glendenning.
Thanks, James.
Woof. Nice one. Producer Ben, excellent work as always. Listeners, we'll see you on Thursday.
Football Weekly from The Guardian. In association with SportingBet.com.